Right, this is an interview with Rob Lester recorded on 5th of July 2013 at Rob's home in Tūrangi. The interviewer is Sue Ford, current councillor with the Manawatū District AA Council, with the role of gathering the archives of the council. The interview is about Rob's involvement with the organisation at the district level, and having read Rob's CV, I hope that the National Office may complete the recording with Rob to discuss his enormous role, given it was so constructive for AA New Zealand during a period of considerable change for the organisation at this time. Rob, hi.
Hi.
Can we start with your relationship with Manawatū Automobile Association? How did you first get involved?
Well, TMN Rogers, the local solicitor there, was also the solicitor for the Manawatū Car Club. And I became involved with him, obviously, because the Manfield project, not Manfield in those days, but the building of a motorway circuit, was very much part of the planning process, and I had become the deputy chairman of the Manawatū Car Club. And as a consequence of that, constantly I was up in his office in Palmerston North. It must have been through that and the fact that I was involved in cars as an enthusiast that I got a call in 1968, one evening, and the call was taken by my wife Wendy, and she called me to the phone, and Noel Rogers was on the line, and he said, "Congratulations, you've been elected onto the AA Council of the Manawatū," and so I was quite happy with that.
Perfect democratic process.
A very democratic process. Very typical of the way the automobile associations were run in their various communities at that time. And so at the very first meeting that I attended, Paul Rieger was there, mm-hmm. and David McKeag, mm-hmm. and David Crisp. Mm-hmm. And so we coincided as newcomers, mm-hmm. onto that AA. Mm. What we experienced initially was not really what we had anticipated, mm-hmm. and so it didn't take more than two or three meetings for us, the Young Turks, I think we were called, to get around the table, probably at Paul Rieger's place, and say, look, it's just not good enough, because it seemed that the AA was something of a fiefdom, certainly in the Manawatū, and from the experience that I picked up later, it was pretty much everywhere, male dominated, of course, and the older timers that were involved, a select group of professionals, really were treating the AA as a private club.
Yes.
In many respects. Yes. And so the consequences of that meeting was that we said we weren't satisfied with that, and we needed to have change if we were going to continue to be members of that particular council. And change came fairly swiftly. Mm. It was, of course, it was also a problem for our manager at that time, George Pickering, who had to keep up with these gentlemen, and we suspected that he was hovering on alcoholism. Mm-hmm. As part of this, so the changes were fraught, mm-hmm. because several of the senior members who preceded us, mm-hmm. On that council resigned.
Goodness.
And then we picked up from there. And one of the first things that happened, I think, the following year when the election, mm-hmm. process took place, was the first time that we got a woman onto then board.
Yes.
It was Yvonne Lane.
Yvonne Lane, yes.
And she had been pretty much blackballed for a number of years, where her candidacy came up each time, and mm-hmm. each time she failed to be elected. Mm. So there was an element of misogyny, I think they call it, and none of us were very happy with that.
No.
So they were good years, really. There were some enthusiastic people that were on that council. Changes came about fairly swiftly. George Pickering was replaced in due time, and we took our turn, of course, as becoming of taking the chair. I took the chair. So I don't remember exactly the time. It's probably down there.
Yes.
But that coincided with the talk about an amalgamation of the various AAs.
Yes.
So we were really talking about amalgamation around about the towards the end of the 70s. That was within mm-hmm. the AA, mm-hmm. within the Manawatu AA.
Yeah.
Was moving out further. Hawke's Bay became involved in mm-hmm. these talks. Mm-hmm. The Wairarapa definitely not, didn't want to know a bar of it.
Yes.
And then Marlborough. So it was really Marlborough, Hawke's Bay, Wellington came on board, and the Manawatu. I need to be fair here. It's recovered memory, of course, but I'm pretty sure that the AA and Hawke's Bay were the initial instigators. Now, I might be wrong there, because certainly Wellington became very strongly involved. And the interesting thing about that was that once the idea bore fruit and we built the amalgamation together, it was time to look for a general manager
of the central, we were now
called AA Central.
Mm-hmm.
And a young accountant from Boots the Chemist mm-hmm. was being interviewed. This would have been in 1980 or 81, mm-hmm. around about then.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a standout mm-hmm. candidate, and of course his name is well known because he's still the general manager of the Automobile Association.
Yes.
And Brian Gibbons was a standout.
Yes.
Now, I suppose I could actually go back, because I know I've been at his 40th and his 50th, so I have some idea, but he must have been in his late 20s.
When he took that role.
Mm. And I think it's fair to say he was a game changer. Really.
Yes.
So the success of Central after 3 or 4 years, the opportunities of scale, the enthusiasm as a consequence of the of coming together as a combined board, all of these things started to tell, and I think the story of amalgamation really began to go to the wider community of the AAs.
That's good.
So we got to the stage in 1988. I had an anaesthetic company, and I was involved with anaesthesia, had been for a number of years, going overseas and doing quite a bit of work in that regard. And also, of course, the director of the Manfield circuit, which was going at full bore at that time.
Mm.
So I was the deputy chairman of the New Zealand Motorsport New Zealand, as it was called, and chairman of the Motor Race Commission.
Oh, goodness.
And I was that for about 14 years. So really the AA thing began to absorb more and more of my time.
Mm.
And in the end, basically, I took 2 years off. I resigned from Motorsport New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
From the board,
mm.
and a lot of the work that I was doing at Manfield was deflected onto Wendy, and of course I was home and I was able to continue with that. Mm. But really, Brian Gibbons and I, and occasionally with other parties, we just traversed the country from top to bottom to talk to the other AAs
and show them the success
about the success of how it goes. Some of it, I have to say, was bordered on toxic in terms of
behaviours
of how some of it was taken on board, not necessarily by the councillors, but certainly by some of the managers or chief executives, who you could see their point. Of course, they were going to stood the chance of losing out in this amalgamation process.
Mm.
So there were some of those areas which were.
So
which
while
were
you were actually going through that process, my understanding is that ordinary AA members paid their sub to their local area or
Correct.
District.
That's right.
And that would have continued until such time there was a formal national office, wouldn't it?
So in terms of AA, In terms of AA Central, it became centralised.
So the subs came into that central group
at
that point?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And, of course, so that really was a template from which we were able to show others. And, I mean, I can recall flying down to Dunedin and meeting with the Dunedin AA Council, and there were 21 of them sitting in a room there, and it was a little bit daunting, and of course we heard about the reasons why they shouldn't become involved in
this
amalgamating procedures and so on and so forth, and that in fact we were out of step with what they considered to be the mores of the organisation. I can recall at the point in which I was leaving, because I left them to it, was, in fact, I was with Osborne, who was chairman of Auckland. That's right.
Yes.
I've forgotten his first name. Mm. Yeah, the two of us. And I can recall just before we left, I said, well, you know, this is an interesting discussion we're having here. And of course, it's been mentioned that we are out of step with the Automobile Association. I suggest that it's not us who are out of step. I think it's actually the Otago Association.
But in effect, you were actually literally flying literally on your seat of your pants, because you had no previous game plan for everyone to look at and consult on.
No, we didn't really. We what we had from the central experience was probably insufficient
from the perspective of others.
Yes, that's right. And when you start talking about, I mean, when you talk about the opportunities of scale here, like in the purchasing of vehicles, like 90 plus vehicles were actually owned by the AA movements throughout the country.
In the individual councils.
If you go to a purchaser and say, you know, we want 50 vehicles, what you get for that is every one of them will be painted,
nicely.
Every one of them will be provided with the tooling up and so on. You could save up to $7,000 on a Toyota Hiace.
That's right.
By doing that.
Just a little aside from that, were you at that stage of the game writing your own? I mean, I know there was a sign writer at Central, and now it's obviously done as a government thing. Was that occurring at that time? I never thought about it, because they've still got that AA look about them.
It was occurring all over the country.
Yeah.
The AA were the sign writers.
Exactly.
And it was a substantial economic business. It was a substantial business arrangement for the AA movement with the government agency at the time.
Mm.
And then gradually with the we were actually losing out in terms of the private enterprise within the various AA areas. But that came later. Oh, yes, yes, it did.
I was fascinated in my little explorer amongst all the minutes and things that Mr. Register was your sign writer.
Yes.
And he's a wonderful artist.
Oh, Basil Register.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So that's just a little aside.
And of course, he very highly regarded. He retired before the final movement.
Before we lost
that particular franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some wonderful personalities and characters within, and still are, of course, within the AA movement, because it's the kind of movement that gets good people involved.
Yes, I think so.
It sort of ticks all the right boxes there.
Mm, absolutely. What was your connection supporting that amalgamation of Wellington and Nelson? How did you sell the idea of a national amalgamated group?
Well, I think we just sat around the table. My recall of the individual conversations is not particularly good. There are minutes, of course, available, and I'm sure that Brian Gibbons would be able to locate some of those.
Mm-hmm.
But it was individuals more than the actual than the movements involved.
Yes.
Individuals who suddenly said, "Look, this is a good idea."
Yeah.
And we've got to give it a try, because in the circumstances which we described at the beginning of this conversation, you know, the way the AAs had become these, they were seen as elitist.
Yes, indeed they were.
It's fair to say. Yes. A masculine elitist organisation, primarily with professionals within their various disciplines involved.
Mm.
So we were wanting to see it more involved in terms of the public.
Mm.
And while there was, it was a great movement in terms of the assistance that was given, there were all sorts of opportunities there.
Mm-hmm.
Within that,
That
could have been grown.
I can well imagine.
And this, of course, is where Brian Gibbons was absolutely on his own.
Yeah,
The ability to grow the
very
business.
Well together.
Yeah, yeah.
Both had ideas.
Oh, well, we drove long distances together. So, I mean, it was an opportunity for awful lot of...
Share ideas.
And I'm not too sure. I think you're flattering me about sharing ideas. I think the ideas more came from Brian than me. But they were very interesting times. And of course, we also the thing about the AA that I found extremely attractive was that it was a movement that liked to include wives or partners.
Yes, that's quite right.
And that this then I think was a strength. Because it brought that a little level of shared enthusiasm into the movement, and more particularly in terms of conferences and so on that occurred, where the wives were able to accompany the husbands, and the consequence of that. I mean, Wendy and I were incredibly fortunate in this regard because we did some wonderful trips, and. It was with people that we really enjoyed
their company absolutely
and respected too, and it goes together
doesn't it
so in that
tell regard. Me you spoke about it before and I had what Wendy brought it up the comment you made before it was a national body and how some people would go and check out the situation
when Paul Rieger hears this he'll start laughing. It was an incredible situation where, I mean, each year there was a conference of the various AA, 16 separate entities, and they'd all come together. And there would be a situation where a particular venue would be selected and it moved around the country, as you'd expect.
And it still does.
But then an official delegation...
From which council?
No, from the I suppose we had all the various AAs had a central organisation.
Oh, I see.
You
yes,
see?
Yes.
And so and that was where I'm trying to think of his name. He's a good guy. It'll come to me.
Mm-hmm.
that operated a central organisation, but they would go off to check on the facilities. And would come back and report not just on the facilities, but the rooms, the decor, and I used to think this was
food
incredibly expensive, arrogant, intrusive, and unnecessary.
Exactly.
I couldn't believe it. However,
that
was all part of it. And that all went pretty quickly.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Look, all the changes were not for the best. Let's face it. In these circumstances, where you're face to face with a tradition, there are casualties in that regard, and that was unfortunate.
Mm.
But certainly, looking back, it's not only the growth in membership that I take a certain pride in as being of some use at some time, but the fact that now. There it's more multicultural.
Very definitely.
The gender imbalance is being addressed, not totally, but it's being addressed.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this community thing, which is much more apparent now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a consequence of that is that the automobile associations in their various decision making processes look upon things as collegial rather than within their own little type.
And I think that's an international concept too now with AA Australia and others. There's a lot of work going internationally as well. I noted on your CV you were founder of the AA Driver Education Foundation. and which you sought to expand the role of NZAA into a major community concern requiring a central private sector umbrella organisation. Mm. This is relating to the Alchemy projects and the SAD programme and so forth. What prompted you to bring in these educational ideas into AA?
Well, I think I'd have to preface this by saying that one of the great mistakes, and I have to take some responsibility because I was involved with that decision making, that the AA made when finally the merger process was complete, was to not have a role for the president once the 3-year span was over. In fact, a whole lot of good people fell into a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
And when my time came at the end of 95, 96, I thought this is such a pity because there's things that we can do. And I put it to Brian Gibbons that there was a chance here that we could be seen to be outside of the actual AA protocols.
Mm.
With something like a Drive Education Foundation, which could attract some high-profile people, and become a bit of a mover and shaker within that area, and I can recall taking it to one of the last AA council meetings that I was chair, and putting it to them, and it was passed, I think, unanimously.
Good.
That should, this should happen. So it required, of course, an injection of money from the AA to make it happen, because we needed a chief executive and so on. Plus, of course, there was the cost of travel and so on for various board members. It was an opportunity to. The first thing we picked up on was the SAD program, which was initiated in Whanganui and was an extremely highly regarded program throughout secondary schools in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So that slid seamlessly into the new operation.
Mm-hmm.
And from then we were able to look at other initiatives and we began to develop those. And we had some very, very good people on that board, and one in particular was Bob Field from Toyota.
Oh, okay.
And of course, he
excuse me.
He an extremely he's a great thinker, you get people like that involved in the decision making, and immediately you have the clout that's necessary move the process on. You know, and we had a number of people like that who were not within the AA movement, but found a worthwhile niche.
Oh, that's
in helping
this. Absolutely.
And so it carried on for a good 10 years or more. It's still there, but it's in a different
form.
Different form. Financed differently.
Yes.
Has very close links with transport agency and with government departments and so on. So it still is an AA thing, but part of the original idea was to be removed from a too close association with the AA, so that it became attractive to people outside of the organisation, as I've just mentioned, people like Bob Field and so on, to actually come onto it.
Oh, okay, right.
Because the problem is that the AA is seen as a national movement.
Mm-hmm.
And while it remains a national movement, as it gets more and more into commerce, it's seen as a competitor.
Oh my goodness!
In terms of a lot of these issues, and you had to be very careful with that.
Mm-hmm.
That the whole essence of the AA is broad-based acceptance.
Precisely.
And so as it became. I mean, in driver training, for instance, as the AA, as a driver with the various initiatives they had in that ground, they were competing, of course, with private enterprise.
That's exactly right.
And whereas the Drive Education Foundation, while AA were assisting in the financing and so on of that, it was actually distanced from how do we say it? Where you're competing.
Yes.
And so What happened was the AA, the Drive Education Foundation, was able to bring together driving instructors from all over the country to come each year to the to their particular conference. So there was this amalgamation of ideas and initiatives, and it made it a little easier to take on board some of the changes that, well, some of the, I mean, changes just keep coming every year.
They do.
From
they do. Yeah,
yeah. And so that was it worked in that regard.
Very good.
I think that there were government agencies as well that perhaps were more comfortable with some. It was an operation making recommendations outside of the AA. It's a little bit of the tall poppy thing, you know. That's all there hovering a wee bit, and so I might be wrong in this, but that was my perception.
With the incredible changes the organisations faced, you know, during your involvement, it's probably for AA the most tumultuous time, really. What would have been the most enjoyable parts of that for you?
Oh, I suppose nothing succeeds like success. I mean, there were occasions when I can recall walking back to my seat, having made some comment at one of the. At one of the meetings that we were having during that amalgamation process, and one of the managers of one of the others saying to me as I went by, "You bloody traitor," and stuff like, "Oh yes, yes," it became, and in some of the, and I don't think there's any point in going into the actual various AAs identifying them, but in some of them it was absolutely, it was
very threatening for them.
Very threatening for them. And I think in retrospect, thinking back, I mean, all that that did for me was make the challenge even more. but looking back, yes, I can understand some of them feeling that their careers were being jeopardised and so on. So, you know, you had to take that. But I think probably the single episode that more than any other for me gave satisfaction was an extraordinary meeting that we had in Auckland at the Auckland airport, short notice, where I flew up with three colleagues, three colleagues from Central, that was, to talk to the Auckland AA, who for some reason or other considered themselves fairly special in terms of the hierarchy and so on. And it became apparent during the course of those discussions that we really were pushing water uphill with a sharp stick here. The conditions and so on, they didn't like the idea. They wanted to change the word merger to start with, because merger sounded as though they may be coming in as supplicants, and there was all this sort of stuff going on. And in the end, it reached the point where I took possibly the biggest risk that I took individually in that whole process. I just got up and said, "I'm wasting my time," or "We're wasting our time," and walked out. And everything, fingers and toes crossed, that my three colleagues would follow me, and they did.
Yeah.
So we really hadn't gone far down the corridor when one of the Auckland representatives called out, "Just give us a few more minutes. Just hang in. Just give us a few more minutes." And we went back in, and I think basically the one issue that was central to the discussions was that head office would move from Wellington to Auckland.
Yes.
And it was at the time, given the fact that we spent so much of our personal time and energy to make the thing happen, at the time it seemed to me personally like, oh, you know, it's a breakthrough. We're there, which we were in that respect. But I came to regret that particular decision because I always believe that the centre of government is where the centre of the AA should be.
Yes.
However, I mean, it's
technology's taken over these days.
It's gone. It's all gone.
Doesn't matter.
I mean, that was purely the personal personal concern. Yeah, I was disappointed about that, but you know, it was it went ahead. And, I mean, it's certainly doing particularly well at the moment.
Yes, it is. Yeah. You spoke before about giving up a lot of your other work so that you could get this on the road. How did that impact on your family, your friendships,
well,
and social life?
No, I don't. It didn't really, to a large extent, because I mean, when you say you're giving up time, you might be 3 days a week you'd be disappearing, but you'd be back for weekends.
Sure.
And a lot of our work at Manfield, of course, was weekend work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually competing through most of that time myself.
Truly?
Yes, and in that regard, you know, that was a nice...
You put your race hat on and...
Oh, my goodness. And that was an outlet too.
Yes, yes.
So, and of course family were coming along behind me and they were beginning to come into the into it. So in terms of family, the bonding was very good. In terms of some of the other relationships, I mean, in terms of Motorsport Association... Mm. The big thing was that when I put myself back onto the ballot, after 2 years, there was concern. Well, will I get back?
Yes, of course.
Because it had been a fairly high profile job that I'd been doing in beforehand. So I decided that the best thing would be to go only for the deputy position, the vice president. Which would be a clear indication then to
if
people,
you're interested.
You know, either you're in or you're out, and it was incredibly satisfying that year to go back with 56 votes, and the incumbent who had taken over sadly got 6.
Oh my goodness!
So you could say it was a fairly substantial. I mean, it immediately came back to me, well, okay, you've taken it on, you've got a big level of responsibility here. And I think the response in that regard was adequate, because the first thing that came from that was I did a paper that suggested to the motorsport fraternity that we were losing the best and brightest of our potential competitors because at an early age they were going karting and they were going on motorbikes and motocross and all of these things. And I moved that we should bring the age of youngsters coming into motor racing on controlled circuits to 12.
Goodness.
Now, this took a bit of working on, of course. Mm. And I can recall being told that the first death or injury would be on my head, etc. But I really totally believe that it was going to be the best step that we could take in New Zealand. The first youngster to come in on that as a 12-year-old was Scott Dixon.
No.
Yes.
Truly.
Yes. I actually raced against him. I was 59 and he was 12. So, and that was, yeah, that was a nice experience.
Very
satisfying. But from then on in, you know, the New Zealanders are all over the world.
Absolutely.
In motorsport, having come in far earlier than, I mean, we have veterans at 16.
It's unreal.
And in Australia, of course, they can't even begin until they're 16 because of their insurance problems.
I see.
But we have ACC here. It's a big difference.
Of course. Yeah.
So, so that was probably that one decision that I believe was a bit of a game changer.
Yes. Yeah. You're going around the country with Brian convincing people about an amalgamated organisation, that time you would not have been earning any money, would you?
No, it was as chairman, I think from memory, as chairman, I think it went up in increments from $7,000 to $12,000 a year.
Yeah, when you've got a young family.
But of course we had and at that time I think
You had the other business.
We had an income from Manfield.
Okay. Yeah, I see.
Yeah. So I mean we were never in it for the money, let's face it.
Oh, I can tell. Okay, you've told me heaps of things that have happened through this, and it seems to me that as far as Manawatu Centre is concerned, your role was massive in this whole amalgamation thing. What do you see is the future for AA in New Zealand?
I think there will always be a future for motorists to have an advocate. Because
absolutely.
Because government can move arbitrarily, unfairly, sometimes without
any consultation,
any rhyme or reason, consultation, what have you.
Yeah.
And I think that the AA in its present sense, present guise, is not under threat.
No.
But definitely it's a bone in the throat or a burr under the saddle, if you like, of government departments. Mm. And the fact that we've reached the point where the consultation process with the AA, and that the AA is independent, so it can lash the government from time to time on some of its the petrol prices and all these sort of things.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Safety issues. Yeah.
Because really, when you look upon the whole motoring movement in this country, I mean, we ride on top of the rubber tires, and we seem to, and of course our fuel costs and so on, and the fuel prices require a independent body that can actually make things happen. So really, in that regard, I think, and that's sticking to their knitting.
Yes.
I think provided they stick to their knitting in this regard, the future is good. Obviously, somewhere along the line, we're going to lose some of the best and brightest that we've had for many years, but no one's irreplaceable. And yes, I don't see the AA as a consequence of the splendid people that have gone beforehand become a casualty of any particular process at this time.
No, indeed. No, I couldn't agree with you more that way. Mm. Yeah. Have you got anything else you want to talk to me about AA? Yvonne Lang.
Yeah.
Lane, rather.
Yeah. That was a tragedy there.
Yes.
Well, let's say it was the potential for a tragedy. It was a situation where she had tried over 4 or 5 years, and I'm sure I'm correct in this, she'd always put her nomination forward in due time, etc., etc. And there were moves within the AA, and I'm saying previous to the we'll call them the youngsters that came through, she was blackballed.
Yes.
Because she was a woman.
Yes. But when she did come on, she proved her worth considerably.
She became a chairman.
That's right. Yes.
And I think that it was a revelation to other AAs. I don't say, well, I'm not absolutely certain. I don't say that she was the only woman on an AA council at that time.
I was going to
ask
you that.
But she'd been one of very, very few.
Yes.
And I can recall the 21 that Osborne and I faced up to in Otago. There was no women around that table.
Yes. Yes.
So yes, it was. And of course, the other thing too. I mean, I can recall at the meeting at Wairaki that didn't go down too well with some of my colleagues. But I was there as a guest. And I felt compelled to get up and say, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a point. And so I was told, go ahead. And I said, you know, I think you should all, everybody here, look to your right, look to your left, look to your front, and look to your rear. And once you've done that, you'll become aware of the fact that at that particular time, and I'm talking but way back in the 90s, at that time, we had a gender imbalance. Mm. We had a cultural imbalance, and it was time that it should be addressed.
Agreed.
And I think not necessarily because of that, but certainly as time has gone on, that has been addressed.
Absolutely, it has. Yes,
that is a source of great satisfaction.
It must be for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I can't think of anything else at the moment. Of course, one person I did miss out, and you will know well, and I didn't get this job until after Bob Smith had died.
Yes,
and I'd love to have had a chat with him about his time on the board as well, because it would have been almost as exciting as yours, I'm sure.
Well, it was, and of course, and I enjoyed Bob there. He on the council because he was very strong with his ideas, and we saw things totally differently, which was good. I mean, Bob was one who really wanted everybody to toe the line, and I can recall he put a motion that the Manawatu councillors would swear that they would not, under any circumstances, exceed the speed limit.
Oh.
And of course, I can recall that there was an exchange of
looks
between Paul Rieger and I, and not that we were necessarily bandits on the road or anything like that, but I believed it would have made us a laughing stock.
Oh, I'm glad he wasn't in the car with me. I've been up to two rings a day.
Exactly. So and by only saying that, that was just part of it. But Bob was a great stickler for protocols.
And
fine.
Absolutely.
I respected the view, but I certainly wasn't going to vote for his motion.
And of course, the engineer in him was a very useful thing for our councillor.
When it came to roading,
and
I mean, his advice from time to time
was perfect.
Was
it really was. I mean, we've had, as you know, a lot of issues with the Manawatu Gorge, and of course, he was very much into keeping us informed about that and Saddle Road to make sure that things were.
Of course, we've never had an adequate bypass to the. To the
absolutely.
Paiotua Track, yes. I mean, I used to do that from time to time. But it was both those roads were challenging.
Yes.
And if I happened to own a large trucking company, the extra cost would have been horrendous.
Exactly. Yes, I quite agree. Yeah.
But it was it's a very challenging gorge.
Very much so. Yeah. Very scenic, but very challenging.
Yes. But I love the walk.
So do I.
I think that walk is, I don't know who put it together, but somebody there deserves.
You mean the one on the railway track?
Absolutely.
It's perfect.
Somebody
they're
deserves
having
to get something.
20th anniversary, I think, next year.
Amazing. And of course, it's, I mean, where we are here, I can walk the dogs free on seven or eight different tracks in the course of a week, getting my 3 or 4 Ks in.
Good on you.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I agree. Walking's an important thing.
Or cycling, for that matter. But so the work that's happening in that regard, I think, is and of course the new cycle tracks over on the other side of the lake there.
Yes.
Around,
yes. Wonderful idea.
Yeah. Just superb. Mm.
Well, thank you, Rob.
I think we've probably carried everything
through, and I'd like to thank you and Carol for your hospitality today.
Wendy.
Lovely time. Sorry, Wendy.
Yeah, right.
I've got Carol written down.
You have Carol written down,
So thank you, Wendy.
Yeah.
It's been lovely.
Yeah, I'll show you some of the, there's a couple of photos here.
Lovely. Thank you. Mm.